Also, when I read the description of the race, it said that it was the easiest 50K in Colorado, which I was like, oh, okay, well, it's gonna be a really easy race.
DizRun's Radio episode 530 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to DizRun's Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive in today, no sponsor today, which means I am my own sponsor. And just want to let you know slash remind you that, you know, if you're struggling on your progress towards your goals, you know, if you haven't been seeing the progress that you expect, and you're ready to maybe kind of get a little help along the way, that my coaching services are available, both at the Coterie and at the one-to-one level. There's a few openings in the Coterie and a handful or so openings available currently in the one-to-one coaching world. So if you are so interested, head over to dizruns.com/coaching. You can get a little feel for kind of my coaching style. Although if you've been listening to the show for a while, you kind of know my style, I think. I think I've communicated that clearly. But whatever questions you might have, pricing information, all that good stuff is available on the website, dizruns.com/coaching. And if you're ready to get started, let me know and we will get the ball rolling. So with all that being said, let's go ahead and dive in now to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today on the show, I'm talking with a runner that has experienced some pretty epic highs and lows in her life, with running really being a central theme in both cases, and really with everything in the middle as well. She's been a runner for about 10 years now, and as all of us can probably relate, the person that she is now is the result of many miles and many trials that she has gone through over the years. So without any further ado, it is my pleasure to be able to welcome Ms. Sam Gardner to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Sam. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, definitely. The pleasure is mine. And guys, if you want to check out Sam's blog, and it's definitely a good one. Lots to take in there. MobileBayRunner.com is the website. MobileBayRunner.com and Mobile Bay Runner on all the socials, especially Instagram and Facebook. I noticed something on our blog that said I'm on Twitter, but I don't really tweet, so don't even bother following me there. So if you're a Twitterer, maybe not so much, but IG and Facebook, you can find her. And as always, we'll have everything linked up like we always do. Dizruns.com/530 is the link for the show notes for today's episode. So Sam, the way we always start off the show is with the same very simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a simple answer, and sometimes quite the opposite tends to be true. But it's just a fun place to start, and that is to just simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah, so you say this is a simple question, but I really think it's kind of complicated. So I don't know. In the last 12 months, I've really raced everything from 1 mile to 50K. So I've done 1 mile, 2 mile, 5K, multiple 5Ks, 10Ks, 10 mile, 15K, half, wow, full, 50K. So choosing a favorite is kind of hard, but since you said it's the favorite distance to race, I'm going to go with the 5K.
Okay.
I typically consider myself to be a longer distance runner, but I like racing 5Ks because I think part of it is just the ease of accessibility. Like if anywhere you are, you can pretty much find a local 5K to participate in, you know, any given weekend of the year. And I don't know, I like to push myself and to run fast. And I also like that there's not a whole lot of recovery and that you can pretty much race a 5K every weekend if you wanted to. So
that's fair. That's fair. I would make the argument that I don't know why anyone would want to race a 5K pretty much every weekend. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. Everybody has their preference. But I'm curious in that you said, you know, you tend to think of yourself as a longer distance runner, yet you enjoy racing the 5K, and it's such a different thing between, you know, the 5K and even, you know, even the 10K. But certainly you get into the halves and the fulls and anything long in that type of ballpark, it's a big difference.
Yeah.
Are you just that much of a runner that you just don't really care? Like, just give me a race and I'll run it? Or why do you like the 5K as much, even though you kind of think of yourself as being a longer distance runner?
I think I just would run any distance that anybody asked me to run because I just love running. the 5K, I don't know. I guess I kind of feel like that's probably one of my stronger distances. So it probably makes it, you know, you tend to like what you're good at. Mm-hmm. So, that probably has something to do with it as well.
That's fair. I don't mean to try to put you on the spot and make you defend the 5K, because even though it's not my thing, you know, everybody
no, I know it's not your thing. I've heard you say that.
I've said that a few times, apparently. It's words getting around. But
yeah.
so we'll shift off of that, though. But 50K, what had ultra marathons been in your on your radar for a while, or how'd you, because that was, if you've heard me say that I don't like the 5K, you've also heard me probably say I'll never do a freaking ultra marathon, and then we all know how that turned out. So yeah. how did you get into that side of the sport?
Yeah, so well, every year for the past several years now, I have run my age on my birthday. Mm-hmm. But I typically break that up into two runs, but so I guess, like, you know, 29, 30, 31, 32, I've done all of those distances on my birthday. And I decided that when I ran my first full marathon when I was 26, and I decided that when I was 31, I was going to run my first 50K. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I mean, I kind of honestly liked the idea of, training for and doing the 50K, because in my mind, I thought it was going to be easier than racing a marathon, because I thought, you know, I'll just be running, you know, just to complete it and run. I can run as slow as I want to or whatever. But it was really intense. The race itself was pretty tough. So I think it's probably one of the toughest things that, as far as running goes, the toughest race I've ever done, for sure. Which it didn't help that, so I live in Alabama, pretty much at sea level, and the race that I did was in Colorado, and it was at like 7,000 feet, and then, you know, started at 7,000 feet of, you know, elevation, and then we probably gained like over 2,000 feet mm-hmm. of climbing during the race, and it was also on trail, which, not like a technical trail, but it was more just like soft packed, dirt, you know, but, so basically I had no, you know, believe it or not, there's no mountains in Alabama. So, I had not really trained for the hills, nor had I trained for trails. So I just trained on the road like I normally do. And, all of those factors kind of came together to make that race very tough.
Yeah, but did you?
But I finished
it. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I finished it, and that's really all that matters. So.
Yeah, definitely. I can totally relate to that, and of course here in Florida we don't have any hills or mountains or anything of
right.
that nature to train on as well. So I can commiserate with you a little bit there. But with you know, like you said, doing most of the training on the roads and then getting to the trail to run the race, was that because you didn't have access to trails, or was it kind of like you maybe hadn't done much trail running and didn't realize, because that was a surprise for me when I started running on the trails on occasion, was just how much more difficult it was to run
yeah.
on even, like you said, not a non-technical trail, but just a trail versus the road. Was that a similar situation, or was it kind of a necessity that you didn't do much trail running before the race?
We don't have a ton of access to trails. I could drive, you know, less than an hour to get to some trails, but I guess I just didn't really make that effort to do that. But also, when I read the description of the race, it said that it was the easiest 50K in Colorado, which I was like, oh, okay, well, it's going to be a really easy race, but apparently most 50Ks in Colorado are probably pretty difficult, so that probably wasn't really saying anything. But also, when, you know, it's talked about it being packed dirt or sand or whatever, so I was like, well, you know, mm-hmm. packed dirt will be the same as, you know, a hard surface, it should be fine. So I was just kind of like, you know, ignorance is bliss. I'll just right. pretend like this is going to be no big deal. But yeah, so it was tougher than I was expecting.
Yeah, definitely. And Yeah, I love the qualifier that it's the easiest 50K, but in Colorado. So yeah, that just lets you know that if that one was that tough, there's some more out there that it's just a different running world out there than it is over here in the Southeast.
Yes. And I was so intimidated at the, you know, everybody's just kind of like standing around getting ready for the race. And like, I mean, people were talking about, you know, their vert and like carrying all these packs and all this just stuff that I was like, I am out of my league. Like, I do not know what I'm doing at the starting line. But anyway, I did it. I would have definitely said that I will never do it again around mile, you know, 28, 29 that day. But I won't say that I'll never do another one at this point. But who knows?
Gotcha. Yeah, you never know what the future might hold. But as a roadrunner going into that trail and ultra, and especially the Colorado scene, which I can only imagine is cranked up to 11 versus the trail and ultra scene in some other parts of the country. But like you said, kind of feeling out of your league. What was that? You know, can we expand on that a little bit more? What was that like for you to go from roadrunner, racer to trail, chill, carry all your water, have your pack, just kind of relax and go out there and do your thing? What was that like for you?
I did like that. I really did like that aspect of it. I think that if we had more trails closer to where I live, I probably would get into that just because it is so relaxed. And I mean, I had a woman like come up to me probably within the last like 3 or 4 miles of the race, and I had stopped to kind of just walk. I was walking up the hills or mountains, and I remember them more as mountains than hills. But anyway, I was walking up, and she was doing the opposite. She was running up the hills and walking down the hills. So we would like flip-flop back and forth. But one time when I stopped to walk, she like came up behind me and she put her hand on my shoulder and she was like, "You've got this. You still look so strong. You just need to keep running, like go to get that finish." And that just like blew me away, you know, just her kindness and sportsmanship. It was like, you know, we were actually competing, you know, in the same race, but it really wasn't a competition at all. You know, she was just like, "Go do this," you know? So, I thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, that's something that is always cool to see. And for those of us that aren't running at the front of the pack, sometimes you see that in just about every race. There's always a little bit of that commiserating and, hey, we got this, let's do it together. You know, you work with me, I'll work with you, and we'll get to the finish line. And sometimes, especially at mile 28 or 29, that's a nice little boost that when you need it the most.
Yeah, and I actually ran the whole rest of the way. Awesome. So, you know, it's just kind of like that's what I needed to hear in that moment, and she said it. So
yeah, perfect.
It's pretty neat.
So going back again one more time, and then we'll start to go forward, but something you said about running your age on your birthday every year, you know, and kind of like we just said, it's impossible to predict the future, but how long do you see that going? Because that's something that I've thought about, and I'm not tough enough to do the mile per year, but I did do the kilometers this year. So, you know, it's at least something. We're getting up there towards, you know, towards that being a ultra marathon distance, not quite there yet, but and kilometers, but we're getting there. How long do you see yourself continue to do that? Because that is an effort as you start to get older.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I will have to convert to kilometers at some point. But I don't know. I mean, I'd like to keep doing it, you know, we'll see. I'm gonna do it as long as I can. We'll put it that way. But like this year I did 18 miles in the morning before work and then 14 after work. So that was, I did it on the actual day of my birthday, which was during the week. Sometimes I've, you know, waited until the Saturday after or before my birthday and done it on a Saturday just because it's easier to do it on a Saturday. But this year I was all about the challenge. I was like, no, I'm going to do this on a Thursday or, you know, whatever weekday it was, just because I was like, it won't be as challenging if I do it on a Saturday. So, sure enough, I did it, but, I mean, breaking it up into two runs makes it much more doable than just running straight, you know? So that's kind of the qualifier there. It's still doable at this point. So,
yeah. Well, and I like that idea of breaking it up because like this year, so I turned 36 a few weeks ago and it was like, like, you know, you get that point in 36K, that's like 22 and a half miles. It's like, God, you're almost that close. You might as well just do at least to get to 26, at least get to the
marathon
distance.
Right, just do a marathon. Yeah, exactly.
You know, even if it's not a race, just to do a marathon. But boy, by the time I got to that point, I was over it. I was ready to be mm-hmm. done. But if I would have come back, I could have easily come back and done another 4 miles later that night, probably. But then would it still count as doing a marathon if you break it up? Like, I don't know. Maybe not so much.
Yeah. I mean, it might not count as a marathon, but it can count as your birthday miles.
There
so,
you go.
I mean,
yeah, definitely. You know, definitely.
A birthday marathon can be a different, you know, we can have different qualifications for that.
Certainly. Certainly. What was that second run of the day like? Were the legs feeling pretty good? Were they recovered during the day, or was it kind of a slog?
Well, it was literally a slog because it rained. It was pouring rain when I got off work that day, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I have to run 14 more miles I get to run 14 mm-hmm. more miles in the rain. So that did make it more challenging this year. One of my best friends came and she ran the whole 14 miles with me.
That's a real friend to do that in the rain.
I know. It was dark, pouring rain, and we ran 14 miles. So, yeah, that helped for sure. I don't remember my legs being too fatigued, but I did the whole compression socks under my, you know, work get up at, you know, and sat. Well, I sit all day at work, so at least that was, it's not like I was on my feet, mm-hmm. during the day. So I think I felt pretty good. And the rain probably ended up being more of a distraction than anything. Cause you're, you know, not really thinking about how tired you are. You're thinking about how crazy it is that you're out here in the rain. So,
Right. Anyway. Well, and as long as you know, as long as you've been doing normal training up to that point, like it's just, you know, it's just a long day of doubles and you get through it and it's your birthday and, you know, and it gives you a story to tell if nothing else.
Yeah, right.
So, how'd you get started in the sport, Sam? Like, has running always been part of the life, or were you an athlete in other sports growing up and then transitioned to running? How'd you find this little crazy little sport that we all know and love at this point?
Yeah, I definitely transitioned to it from other sports. So I went to a small school growing up, and it was one of those things where if you had any athletic ability or hand-eye coordination, you played every sport. Mm-hmm. So like at some point along the way, I played softball, volleyball, basketball, tennis. Tennis was actually my big sport, mm-hmm. That I, you know, played all my entire childhood. But, I actually joined the track team, my sophomore year in high school as a discus thrower, which is really just odd at this point. But my dad knew how to throw the discus, and he, it's more about, I guess, your technique. Mm-hmm. It's not really like you don't have to be like this strong, super powerful, person as long as you have the right technique. So, anyway, he taught me how to do that, and I, joined the team that year. And then the next year I got recruited to run which I ran the 800, but really I was recruited to do the 3,200 meter relay, but mm-hmm. still an 800. Mm-hmm. But so that, I guess, is kind of how the running started. But even then I, never ran more than a mile or two, even at practice or anything like that. I remember I ran my first 5K when I was a freshman in college, and I had never run 3.1 miles, consecutively mm-hmm. at that point. So, anyway, but I guess I got more into running when I was in college because I didn't have any organized sports. You know, mm-hmm. sports had been a huge part of my life, you know, from the time I was little all throughout high school. And then you get to college and it's kind of like, well, you know, I don't have any sports now. Right. So that's when I definitely got more into running. I actually took a jogging class as an elective. I think that's probably what really got me more into it. So anyway, then, I've pretty much like, you know, have progressed. When I first started, I progressed up pretty naturally from the, you know, did my first 5K and I was like, okay, I think I could do a 10K, you know, did a 10K. And then I was like, well, I can do a half. So, you know, it's just like kind of the natural progression of, which actually I think I did a 10 mile distance in between the 10K and the half even. Mm. So very, natural progression up. So
yeah, that's always helpful. I definitely didn't do that. I did a few 5Ks and a 10K, and then ran the marathon, and then backtracked to like the half marathon, and finally a 10 mile. You know, I was all over the map, which I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, because I don't know if I would have ever done a marathon if I had done it correctly. But then, you know, once you do the one, it's like, oh, well, I can always run something shorter than that.
Yeah, definitely.
when you were climbing the ladder of the distances, you know, I'm going to assume that you really kind of started to really enjoy the sport. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have kept going. But, you know, how did you, I guess what I'm trying to ask is how did it go from something that you enjoyed doing to something that you really were passionate about? Because as I'm sure we're going to get into it in a little bit, both some of the highs and the lows, but you get pretty good highs. I mean, some really good showings at some races. I don't want to spoil it just yet, but, you know, some really good performances. So it obviously became something more than just a leisure time, something I enjoy to do. How did that transition play out?
Yeah, well, I think this probably is the most logical place to kind of get into the whole story of my story with running. Mm-hmm. But when I was training for my second half marathon, I was out running one Sunday afternoon after church, broad daylight, and a man approached me with a gun and basically just raped me repeatedly and told me that if I ever told anybody, he would kill me. And it was a horrible situation and something that happened while I was running. You know, I was out there running when it happened. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a low point. And that was 12 years ago now. So in the time since then, it's been really just crazy to see all of the good that has come from such a terrible situation. And I think that when I probably converted into like a just full blown, like in love with the sport of running was when I met my husband. And that was, 2009. So it was probably 4 or 5 years after the mm-hmm. attack and, you know, 4 or 5 years ago now too. So, kind of in the middle of this, little piece of my life. But, I, you know, just started to train with him and, he had a group that he ran with and they met for track workouts and just kind of like, it became more of a social thing. And I just mm-hmm. fell in love with the community of runners and just really, I don't know, just started to really love the sport. So
and I'm going to assume then that was a lot of part of the healing after the attack as well.
Yeah, definitely. It was a long road of I did not run much for several years in between there. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I basically was just living in fear. I had PTSD and just was always terrified that something was going to happen. You know, and people would try to tell me, well, you know, the odds of something happening to you again are very slim. And I'm like, well, I kind of think the odds of them happening to begin with were slim for such a, you know, random thing like that. But anyway, so yeah, I didn't run very much. And that's actually kind of how I met my husband, is I sent him a message and was like, you know, I am looking for safe routes and, really just like a group of people to run with, because I didn't like the idea of being out there alone running. So I was like, well, I could find friends to run with. That would be awesome. So I sent him a message. I knew he ran and, he responded with a ton of information. We kind of talked back and forth, and then we basically decided that we would meet to run. And we didn't really know each other very well at all at the time. And so it was almost like a blind date, that we just met to run, and, the rest is kind of history, I guess.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I don't want to, if we don't want to talk about too much about the past and that story, we don't have to, but, just a couple of questions that I have, and I'm going to assume that maybe some other folks might have as well. When it comes to running by yourself, is that something that, you still struggle with? Do you not do it at all? Or I mean, because again, I mean, random situation, and you can tell anybody till you're blue in the face that the odds of this and odds of that are what they are. But
right.
You lived it, so clearly it can happen. And no matter how small the odds are, there's always a chance that it could certainly happen again. How do you handle that scenario now? Of you know, if you want to go get a run in, if you get to go run in, but it's going to be by yourself. Is that still an issue, a struggle, or how are you in that phase of running now?
I definitely would rather run with people always. Mm-hmm. But I do run by myself, you know, I would say rarely. I guess I would probably run on the treadmill. I'm more likely to run on the treadmill if it's dark out. So I definitely don't run by myself in the dark, which this happened in broad daylight, so I don't know why I have that little mm-hmm. like hang up, but for some reason it just seems more like ominous out when it's dark. So, but I will run out, you know, outside by myself in the daylight, but I always make sure that I, let at least like two people know when I'm leaving and when I'm going to be getting back, and the route that I'm taking, just because those were things that, I mean, I didn't really know that I needed to like alert my parents that, hey, I'm running from here to here and I'll be back at this time. If I'm not, come, you know, right. check on me or whatever. So I guess I'm always aware of, you know, that the fact that something could happen and that I need to be safe. So, you know what I mean? I'm just on alert, I guess, when I run by myself, but I don't think that's a bad thing at this mm-hmm. point. It's better to just to be cautious and, I don't know, be aware of, the fact that something could happen. And, you know, obviously we all hope that nothing ever would mm-hmm. happen, but, it doesn't hurt to kind of be prepared. And, I guess that's kind of like, why I do, you know, I don't mind sharing my story at all. And I think that it's important for people to just to be aware. Like, I don't want people to be scared. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want this to be like a thing that says like, oh, well, you should never run by yourself at all. Like, no, like go for it. But I just think that it is good for people to, just to kind of have a plan, because you really don't know, like you can say, you know, well, I would never, like, I wouldn't let that happen, or I don't know. So, you know, some mm-hmm. people think that they could, you know, overpower an attacker or whatever. And like, maybe some people could, but you really don't know how you're going to react to that until it happens. And everybody's brain reacts differently. You know, some people might go into that, like just super angry, like, you know, I don't know, get away from me mm-hmm. and yelling and all that. But that's not what I didn't do that. And I mean, I don't know if it would be differently, you know, if I would react differently now or not, but I mean, I'm not questioning how I reacted in right. that situation, but, I think it's just, important to kind of just be aware and have a plan. Just think through like, what would you do, you know? And one other thing is I always carry my phone with me now, mm-hmm. if I'm by myself. So if I feel like I could call, you know, if I needed to, I didn't, that was before the time of cell right. phones being everywhere with us, and things like that. So, that makes me feel safer, mm-hmm. but, or, you know, at least that I could get in touch with somebody if it was an emergency. So,
right.
But yeah.
With the idea of having a plan, and just, you know, thinking about it once in a while as this is something that could possibly happen and how would I react? And like you said, you never know how you're going to react until you're in that situation. You know, mm-hmm. you might think that you're going to fight and you're going to freeze or you're going to flee, whatever, fight, flight.
Right. You know, how right. Right. Work out.
But how do you specifically think about it? Think about how you would react without becoming paranoid or without becoming paralyzed by the fear of what if this, like, this really could happen again. Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, how do you prepare for it without becoming, you know, legitimately being frightened to the point of like, you know what, screw it. I'm not going to run by myself, or I'm not going to run at certain times of the day or whatever the case might be because of this small but very real possibility that something like that could happen.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want fear to rule my life. I think that fear definitely did rule my life for several years. And, which I mean, I think that makes sense mm-hmm. as I was in the, you know, kind of healing process and kind of recovering, I guess, from that. But, I don't know. I don't get, I mean, I guess I stay aware now, but I don't obsess over it. And I'm not fearful really when I run. I mean, I don't know how to explain that though. You know, like I am aware that something could happen, but I don't let that change what I'm going to do. I will say though, if I get any sort of like feeling that, you know, hey, I've seen this car, you know, three times or something, or, you know, if I get any sort of inkling that something might be like suspicious, I like go home immediately. I don't test it. You know, I don't. So that's probably the only thing that I guess I think I probably overreact. Like if I feel like maybe there's something that's out of place or whatever, I'm going to go home immediately. Mm-hmm. Because the day that happened, I actually saw the guy, before he like approached me ultimately. And he was kind of just sitting on these bleachers as I ran by, and he got off the bleachers and kind of started walking the way that I was going. And immediately, you know, my instinct was like, something's up with this guy. Like, you know, this is weird. And I actually changed my route that day. Mm-hmm. And I went a different way and came back by the same place, and he was gone. So I was like, well, I'll just that day I decided to continue on the route that I was originally going to run. And that's where he was hiding and waiting for mm-hmm. me later. So in that, you know, not to play the what if game, but if I had trusted my instincts mm-hmm. and just been like, this is, you know, danger, get out of the situation, I could have just run back to my car that day and things would have been different, you know?
Right.
So if I ever do have an instinct like that, I listen to it at this point.
Well, and shoot, I mean, you know, again, we can play the odds game, and 99% right. of the time the instinct is probably unfounded, but you know what?
Yeah.
So what? If you can avoid that yeah. 1 in 100 or yeah. 1 in 1,000 or whatever it is, mm-hmm. certainly that's the route to try to go. So
yeah.
obviously, you know, very sorry that happened to you, but thank you for sharing your story, because, you know, it again, sad but true, it's one of those things that does happen. And as a guy, I will admit that I don't think about it probably as much as I should.
Right.
Like I just go out and run by myself, whatever, like no big deal. Like I'm not a big guy. I'm, you know, I would probably freeze if something crazy happened too, but like, I just don't think about it. So I appreciate you being willing to share a little bit. And I know it's not probably easy, but hopefully it helps some other folks to at least have that thought, that plan, tell people where you're going to be, all those types of things before the run. So that yeah. just in case there's people that are aware and know where you're going to be, and you've thought about it, and ugh. Couldn't imagine. Yeah. Wouldn't want to imagine, but thank you for that.
Yeah, no, I'm always happy to, there was a time, I mean, that I probably like didn't share, but I guess now I just feel like, you know, I don't know, everybody's been through something, you know, mm-hmm. so like, I think that it's best to share and to be vulnerable. And, I don't know, nothing's, you know, nothing good happens from just hiding things and pretending like you know, nothing's ever been wrong in your life. You know, like, mm-hmm. I think that it's important to share, and then, you know, hopefully something good can come from everybody being more open and transparent with each other.
Yeah, certainly agree. And to shift topics a little bit to something that's, maybe less serious, but and certainly more fun, and you know, it'd be a better way to, or a more in a light way, I guess, to kind of get to the last bit of today's conversation. But like I said, and like I teased a little bit earlier, you know, you've had some lows, and obviously we just talked about probably the lowest of the low, but a pretty good yeah. high in the world of running as well. Winning a race, and not just winning, you know, the local 5K or something like that, when you know, the field's 40 people and you won, and don't mean to disqualify that, because
right.
I've claimed victory before when there was me and 14 people that were running, and I was the only one that was, you know, running, training regularly, but I still won that race, by golly. But
oh yeah, a win's a win.
I absolutely agree. But a win at a rock and roll marathon is a little different than a win at the at the you know, support the church 5K, which is what my win is in. So how did that happen? I mean, obviously there's training and good racing, but like I mean, on that day you win the Rock and Roll New Orleans. I don't know what, a couple 3 years ago at this point. Were you going into it planning to try to be at the front, or how did that whole situation play out?
I still ask myself how that happened every now and then too. So it's, I mean, I don't know. I think I honestly feel like at this point that it was like, I was just where I was supposed to be. Like it was, the timing was right. You know, like that was my day to come out on top. And I mean, the time that I ran would not, I don't think it would have won any other rock and roll or any other marathon, like big marathon ever. You know what I mean? So it was just like, I happened to be the fastest one that day. And I don't know, it was an amazing experience. And I don't know that I'll ever top that, in another race, just the feeling of, breaking the tape at, you know, what's a bigger event. It's probably one of the smaller rock and rolls actually, but anyway, just winning that race and breaking that tape was just like an indescribable, feeling that, in my mind, I just had transitioned from victim to victorious, and, it really brought the whole thing full circle. And, I don't know, I just, love to think about now, like all the amazing things that have come and that running has brought into my life from what started, you know, potentially as like a really negative and could have been just, my running career could have ended very, you know, prematurely. Right. But now it's like so many awesome things have happened. But yeah, that race, I don't think that I had any like expectation of winning the race, at all. And I actually ran a 20-minute PR that day.
Wow.
So that was,
definitely a good day at the office.
Yeah, it was a good day. So I'm like, now I just need to take 20 more minutes off and I'll really be like cooking. I don't think I'll have any other 20-minute PRs, but, yeah, it was just like one of those days where everything clicked, you know, like the weather was good. I felt good. And, I basically was leading the race from probably like mile 16 on, which was just crazy. 'Cause you know, you get a bike escort. I had someone riding with me. I was like, am I really winning this race? Like, it's just, kind of like unbelievable. So it was really cool. Really cool experience. Like, and I felt amazing, the whole time. I might have slowed down a little bit in the last few miles, but nothing like normal. And even afterwards I felt great. I was like, I guess the key to marathons is, or like the secret is just to win them. Yeah. And then you'll always
be out in front.
Good.
You'll always feel fantastic.
Yeah. But anyway, so that was just a really great day and a great experience. So I remember the bike escort, they, I guess they have like a little radio or whatever, but they always play, a song for the winning female, apparently. So they play, Daydream Believer. Mm-hmm. And then they replace the word Homecoming Queen with Marathon Queen.
Oh, wow.
And they serenade you with that. And they tried to play that for me at like mile 24 or something. And I was like, no. Like, we have two more miles to go. You're not playing that until mile 26. So, but anyway, they did play, they sang for me, and I was the queen that day, I guess. So,
that's awesome. When did you know that you had it? I mean, were there other women behind you that you could see? Were you playing that game of looking over your shoulder to see if anybody was there? Or were you just in the moment and going?
Yeah, no, I think that's the other good thing about the bike escorts. They have their little radios. And so they're talking to the people with the, you know, the person with the second place girl. And I mean, they kept saying like, well, you know, you've got this in the bag or whatever, but I didn't want to like, just think that that was true. I think I always run better if I expect that there's somebody like right behind me, you know, even if they're not, I just pretend that there's somebody right there just in case, makes me run better. But, yeah, I don't think I was ever really like, worried that she was going to catch me. I remember also like my husband was standing at probably at the 25-mile marker, and he's like, "You're winning." I was like, "I know." but I was like, "Why are you standing right here?" I was like, "You got to get to the finish. I want you to be at the finish, you know?" So he was like, "Well, I can't get there faster than you." I was like, "You better run." So he went all like tearing off through the middle of this field. I still had to like make kind of a loop. And so he like just cut straight across. He's like hurdling low hanging limbs and branches and
get
stuff.
Out of the way.
I was like, "You get to that finish line. If you're not there, I'm not going to be happy."
Do they make a big, I'm assuming they're going to make a big deal. What kind of a big deal do you get for winning a rock and roll race? It's something that I'll never have to worry about, but I'll live vicariously through you. What do you get for that type of thing?
Yeah. I got some money, which was nice. I think it was $500, which is, I mean, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. It's not, I think they used to pay more. But anyway, $500 was fine with me. I got to wear a little crown of flowers, which was fun. you know, little interviews and stuff like that. But it was a neat experience. Trying to think what else. I think that was pretty much the extent of like the what you get type.
Right.
But yeah, so I had never made $500 from running before.
Heck no, no. It's, you plan to go in there, you're going to spend X amount for the race and for the hotel and all that stuff. And then, if you break even, that's and even if you end up with a few bucks in your pocket, that's just the icing on the cake.
Yeah, exactly. I think I at least recouped my costs
that day. There
you go.
So coming out of that, you know, you win in, like you said, I mean, and again, we're not trying to qualify anything, but it wasn't like there weren't tens of thousands of people there. It wasn't like a huge race, but it doesn't matter. You win the race. You can't take that away from anybody. Does that change how you go into races after that? Has at least maybe right in the immediacy following that, do you feel like you put more pressure on yourself to live up to that type of pace, even though whether you place the same or not? Were there any, for lack of a better way of saying it, negative effects coming out of that for you in your running after winning the race?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think that sometimes now people expect me to win. Like I remember, I ran the New York City Marathon, I guess the year after the Rock and Roll New Orleans. And I remember like, you know, people are like, "You go win that thing." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not going to win the New York City Marathon." So I think, I don't know, maybe that does put like a little bit of pressure, like just because it's like the expectation, like people are like, "Oh, she wins marathons." I'm like, "No, I don't," you know, that just happened one time. So, I don't know. I try not to take myself too seriously, which is, you know, I mean, I have a running blog where I write about my running, so I don't know. That's narcissistic anyway, but I really don't like, I try to just have fun with it. And, you know, it's just a sport that, or, you know, a hobby that really, really enjoy. And I don't know, I try not to put too much pressure on myself. And if it's a bad day, it's a bad day, you know, like it's not the end of the world. And, you know, if I run 1 minute faster, is that really going to make me a different person? Like it's not going to change who I am, or, you know, so it's just for fun. So, I can't think of any negative things, specifically, other than that maybe other people, might have an expectation that I'm going to win a race, when that it's likely not true.
Well, and that's good. And it's just, you know, it's like you said, you can have a good day, you can have a bad day, but, you know, and we all know that if you run long enough, you know that it's just because it's race, it doesn't mean that everything comes together perfectly. But boy, when it does, it's nice when some of the faster people happen to stay home that day and you can
go out there, exactly. And
have a great PR and a win on top of it. That's just, I mean, wow, what a cool situation. And you know, of all the hundreds and thousands of races out there, like just everything came together, like you said, on the right day. Like, oh, that's what a great story. Yeah. What a cool experience.
Yeah, I love it. And I just feel like, you know, I was where I was supposed to be, mm-hmm. at the right time, you know, so.
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah.
Exactly. But before we completely wrap up today, Sam, I can't not ask. How's that for a double negative? But I have to ask. I know I saw something on your blog about running Boston at least once. And I know it was at least the post or the article that I saw that uh-huh. you had written. It was a hot day. I don't know. Have you run Boston multiple times, or was that just the one time?
No, I've only done it the one time. So I guess when I did my first marathon, it was like 2012, I qualified for Boston, and I was like, well, I mean, I have to go, you know, it's just mm-hmm. like what you do. And I definitely wanted to experience that. It's such a prestigious, you know, event. But, so I, you know, I guess I qualified in 12 and ended up running it in 2013. I think I'm getting those years right. But well, no.
2013 was the bombing.
Okay, so I ran it in 2012.
Okay.
It was not the year of the bombing, so I guess anyway, it was basically 90 degrees mm-hmm. at the start of the race. And I mean, they were even at the, when you picked up your bib at the expo, you basically like had to sign a like a waiver, like they were encouraging runners to defer their entry to the next year. Like, I think wow. it was the second hottest Boston on record. At that point, you know, we had flown up there. We had a hotel. Like, I mean, it was an expensive trip.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, well, I'm going to run this thing. And kind of in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm from Alabama. Like, it's hot.
I know
Alabama.
What hot is, right?
I'll be fine. Like, it turns out that was not the case. Which I mean, I finished the Boston Marathon, so I'm happy with that. But, I definitely got my money's worth out of the course. We'll just say that. I was out there for a while. I don't know if I, for years I said, you know, like I need to redeem myself at Boston just cause it was such a rough day. But I don't know. I don't know if I'll do it again or not. We'll see, I guess.
As everybody that listens regularly knows, like that's definitely my goal race is to qualify for Boston as I've also said a few times, and you've probably heard, I plan to get my money's worth too. Even if I could go faster, I plan on just taking my time and soaking in as much of the experience mm-hmm. as possible. I don't care if it's 5 hours, six, whatever. As long as I don't get swept, I get across the finish line. That's all I care about on the day that I run there. But of you know, from your experience, even though maybe it wasn't the greatest day at the office, it was obviously hot and things of that nature. What mm-hmm. was the highlight of the race for you?
I guess just participating, like just being out there and seeing all the crowds. And, you know, you have random strangers as you run by that will look your bib number up if you don't have your name written on your shirt, which I didn't really know that was like a thing. But if they'll, like, random people will look your bib number up and then yell your name. You know, I mean, it's just crazy how much support there is out there and just the community involvement. And that was, you know, before the bombing even. Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine how much the city rallies around the runners now, you know, it was just amazing to be out there and to just participate in the event. And I really wish, like, I think what you're saying is spot on. Like you should approach it as a celebration, mm-hmm. you know? It's a tough course anyway, but I had several people that had run it before that said, well, don't try to race Boston, just go up there and just run it. At that point it was just like my second marathon and I was like, oh, well, I can take some time off, you know, I'll like run fast while I'm up there. But if I really wish that I had just been planning to approach it as just a, you know, fun celebration run. I think I would have, like, mentally had a better, you know, I just would have been in a better place mentally throughout the whole race, whereas I was, you know, planning to, quote, race it. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, like, basically walking the last 13 miles of the race. So, you know what I mean? So if I had approached it differently, mm-hmm. I probably would have had a better day in general. But so in my head, I have Boston as this like terrible race for me, but you know what I mean? Like, cause I just crashed and mm-hmm. the heat really got to me and it was just honestly miserable. But if I had approached it as just a celebration and not been worried about, you know, my time, I think it would have been a much better experience. So maybe I do need to do it again and I need to go with that approach.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I know for some folks, I don't know if you're in this boat or not, but like, you know, just for the fact that it's a race, like it's almost impossible can be to slow down and take it easy. Like you're there, you paid the money. Like this is an official time. Like, and right. It's just hard to take it easy. It really is a struggle. So yeah, I mean, for some people, that's just it's not even an option. Even if you want it to be, it's not an option.
Right. Well, the hilarious thing is I think I missed the, you know, everybody goes to the athlete's village before the race and you're kind of just like hanging out, sitting there waiting for the race to start. Which when it's really hot out is not fun, mm-hmm. but, I somehow missed when they told my like corral and wave to be walking towards the start. Somehow missed that. And then, I decided you have to walk like, I don't know if it's not a mile, but it's close to a mile from the athlete's village to the start. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to miss my wave. And I ran from the athlete's village to the start line. I'm like, I got to get there. Like only to walk the second half of the race. So I was like, by golly, I got to the start line on time. But, apparently my race was done after that 1 mile.
Oh, so, lesson learned. If you miss the first call for your wave, like just don't, like
no
as long
deal.
As you're not the last wave, just jump in with the next wave and go that
yep,
way.
Yep. Just roll with it.
Goodness. So as we're wrapping up, Sam, the last question is, as per usual, kind of something philosophical, which as I always say, not meant to be scary, just meant to be very open-ended. It can be short answer, medium answer, long answer, whatever you're comfortable with. But at this point in your running career and obviously with the lows of the lows and the highs of the highs and all everything that's been in between along the way, what does running mean to you? What does being a runner mean to you? When you talk about the fact that you're a runner, when someone says, "Hey, there's Sam over there. She's not only is she a runner, but she's a marathon winner." But when someone's referring to you as a runner, what do you hope that says, or what do you think that says about yourself being classified as a runner? And that's where we'll wrap up for today.
Yeah. I mean, fundamentally, I think being a runner is who I am, and so. I wouldn't want anybody to think that I was anything other than exactly who I am. And I feel like running has just brought so much to my life, and has taught me so many lessons and really, it's really given me confidence, over the years, just, in different ways, that I guess I didn't expect, but, I don't know. I think being a runner is just the core of who I am. And I can't imagine not being a runner at this point. So it's ingrained and just part of my makeup.
I agree. And I think that a lot of people listening probably do as well. So that's where we'll wrap things up. And again, guys, MobileBayRunner.com is the website. Mobile Bay Runner on all things social, but probably not Twitter. So it's there, but
I'm not good at tweeting.
but on the Instagrams, on the Facebooks, you can check her out there and connect and obviously follow Sam's blog as well. And DizRuns.com/530 is the link for the show notes. We'll have everything linked up there as well. So Sam, thank you for taking the time today. Thanks for being honest and open and vulnerable and sharing some of the low parts and the high points as well. And hopopefully that will help somebody along the way in some way. Who knows how it will, but hopefully it will. So thank you for your time.
I hope so.
And all the best going forward. Have a great rest of the year and beyond. And looking forward to staying in touch and seeing what the future holds for you.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Sam and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was your big takeaway? My takeaway, I think, is something that as I've been sitting here after recording and going back and listening through the conversation again. When Sam was talking about how, you know, after her attack and kind of moving forward, the importance of kind of having a plan, thinking things through a little bit. And I think that's something that I know I'm guilty of not doing, of not thinking about some situations, you know. So like maybe, and like I said when we were chatting, you know, as a man, I don't think about the idea of being assaulted as much when running. It still could happen, but it's not something that I think about. But, you know, depending on where you're running, what your workout is that day, what kind of, you know, disaster plans or oh shit moment plans do you have in store? You know, what would happen if you got hit by a car while you were running? What would happen if you got bit by a poisonous snake when you're out on the trail? Or if you got lost on a trail in an area that doesn't have cell signal? What are some of those worst case scenarios that could happen during your run? No matter how unlikely they may be, what kind of thoughts have you given to those situations? And like we talked about, I don't have those thoughts to paralyze yourself. Don't have those thoughts and those loose plans in place to be paralyzed by the fear of what if. You know, the odds of some of these things happening aren't real high. But what happens when you get complacent? What happens when you're on a set of trails that you've run 100 times, but for some reason that one time you got lost? Or what happens when it's a quiet street, but there happens to be somebody tearing down and you're not paying the closest attention and they're not paying attention and the car wins, you know? What happens in those situations? What emergency plans have been put in place or have you thought of? Or, you know, do you have your road ID? Do you have a GPS beacon? Do you have a plan where you tell people, you know, I don't do that. I'm guilty. I don't communicate with Rebecca very often as far as what route I'm going to run or things like that. I just go. So maybe that's something that I need to do more of. And maybe that's something you do as well, whether it's, you know, for if you were to get assaulted, if you were to get lost, if you were to get hit by a car, if you were to get attacked by an animal, the whole nine. What kind of emergency plans do you have in place? Or at least have you thought about a little bit so that if something does come out of the blue and something random does happen, you have a little bit of you know, pre-thought, pre-planning that may have gone into it that would allow your body to react instead of just freeze in the situation. So that's my takeaway. The importance of thinking about some of those things that we don't always want to think about, but if the shit hits the fan, it might be that thing that saves you your life or prevents a bad situation from turning into a real disaster. So think about those things. Think about those things on occasion, not every time, but before you go out for your run. If you know where you're going, think about what some of the possibilities could be, some of the things that could happen, and develop a little bit of an idea of if this were to happen, what would I do? You know, learn from Sam's situation and trust your gut. When it's all said and done, trust your gut. So that was my takeaway. What about you? Let me know. What did you think of this episode? What was it that stood out to you? What was some conclusion that you drew because of our conversation? Let me know on the Twitters, @DizRuns, on the email, DizRuns@gmail.com, and you can always head over to the show notes for this episode or any episode and leave your comments there. And for this episode, once again, DizRuns.com/530. So that is it for today. Thanks for listening to this episode. Hope you enjoyed this one. I know a little bit of that subject matter there in the middle wasn't the most enjoyable. It wasn't the most fun thing to talk about. Certainly wasn't the most fun thing for Sam to have to go through and relive and talk about again. But hopefully that got you thinking about, again, what could happen and having a plan in place. So thanks for making it through that, for bearing with us. Hopefully we ended it on a more positive note for you. Again, thank you for listening. DizRuns.com/coaching if you're interested. And until next time, please be well. Please take good care. Be safe out there on the roads, on the trails, wherever it is you're running. And can't wait to talk to you again in the next episode. So until then, take care, guys.